everybody. Welcome to a special episode of Talking Games with Tim and Clayton. Neither Tim or Clayton are here. It's just me, the consummate guest and co-host of Talking Games with Tim and Clayton, Kellen. I am here alone in my own podcast recording studio because neither Tim nor Clayton are around, and they trust me to do so many things with their show. So I decided to interview a close friend of mine about his video game experience. So how about you introduce yourself? This is Charlie Carroll.
Sure, yeah. Hi, I'm Charlie Carroll.
Charlie, you are a comedian and performer here in Chicago, correct?
I am.
What else do you do here in Chicago?
I'm a Grouponer. Mm-hmm. I work over at Groupon. I also, outside of just doing comedy, I direct a lot. Mm-hmm. So
you're one of the main directors at the Annoyance Theater, correct?
If there were main directors,
yes. But you've directed a couple times on the main stage at the Annoyance Theater.
I have.
You are also a motorcycle enthusiast, correct?
That is true. That is a more recent thing. That's just been the last couple of years, but I've become somewhat obsessive about motorcycles more recently.
Sure. Yeah. But the reason you're here on the podcast on mm-hmm. Talking Games is not to talk about directing and not to talk about motorcycles, but it's to talk about video games.
Right.
We were having a conversation not too long ago mm-hmm. where you and I were talking about video games and you claimed that you feel you are a video game addict.
Yes.
Yeah. And I just kind of wanted to break that down. So what does that mean to you? Like, you've obviously, you're self-proclaimed that way. I'm guessing that you haven't gone and talked to a doctor and they've told you that you're an addict. You're not in a program or anything.
No, I'm not. I guess, going back to sort of like how I began in video games, mm-hmm. like, I think it's probably like most people of our generation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I had a friend, Christopher, growing up, and we were just, that was like what me and Christopher mm-hmm. did. When we got together, best friends, and it was, you stayed up till way too late, till your parents were coming in the room and screaming at you sure. about going to bed, just playing video games. You know, we had, his dad, strangely enough, was, worked for like the CIA.
What?
And okay. yeah, built weapons and stuff for the government.
Okay.
And so back in the like, early 90s when everyone was lucky if they just had dial-up internet, he had a full LAN system in his house.
Wow.
So we were probably the lucky few, you know, fifth graders playing Doom, like on five computers throughout the house, killing each other, killing it, you know, like,
wow.
we were very lucky in that way. So, so that was like, that's when it really, you know, video games really like, took hold with me, you know?
Sure.
Like, I never was really into Atari. I started with Nintendo, mm-hmm. the first, with Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
And,
did you have a Super Nintendo in your house?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. And it started in, like, you know, it was in my parents' bedroom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things like Maniac Mansion was a game that I would play incessantly.
Yeah, Maniac Mansion's great.
Oh my gosh. Love that game. And a lot of those, you know, Nintendo classics, was really into, would play for hours. And then about, around seventh grade, I started playing more sports.
Sure.
And when I wasn't actually outside playing sports, I was coming inside and playing sports video games.
Are we talking like Ken Griffey Jr. baseball? Or are we talking yeah. like Michael Jordan versus Larry Bird? Like early Madden games?
No, I think by now I was getting into, I think it moved up to PlayStation.
Okay.
So now I was playing on, I was playing like NBA Live.
Sure.
NBA Live 95 was huge. Mm-hmm. NBA Jam.
NBA Jam, yeah, absolutely. Getting the big heads, playing as presidents, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, playing as Bill Clinton. what kind of dream is that? That any kid's like, you know, I love playing as, you know, Sean Kemp, mm-hmm. but if only I could play as Bill Clinton.
Sean Kemp?
And who was the funk guy, with the dreads or something?
Was it Parliament? There was a Parliament code. There was a lot of different, like, odd mid-90s references that if you were to be like, that would be like playing NBA Live and you could play as Kanye and Jay-Z, where people are like, that's okay, I guess? That's an odd kind of concept?
I feel like you actually can't, I might be getting this wrong, but I just downloaded, I say just, like 2-3 years ago, I downloaded NBA Jam on my phone, and was playing that for a while, and I'm pretty sure you could play as rappers at some point.
Oh yeah?
Like modern day rappers, which I guess the legacy continues. Yeah. But yeah.
So you're playing these basketball games.
Playing basketball games, playing baseball games, I did play football games a lot. I played Madden until they started doing the sight thing with the quarterback, and then I stopped.
That's like, what, Madden 08? 09, I think? That was the first Madden that I ever played, because I remember I was never a big football fan in terms of video games, but that was the first one I saw that I liked. I was like, oh, cool, but I could understand why people hated that.
I had gotten so used to being able to just, like, press triangle when I couldn't tell if anyone else was open. You know what I mean? And when you had to have the view, like looking around, that's when I started to get like, okay, that took away the my backup. But yeah, so I started playing all of those, and that's when I started finding myself playing more than I wanted to. It'd be one of those things where I would play pretty incessantly. Like, I had a little brother who actually hated sports games. He didn't really love playing video games all that much at all. But I would sort of pressure him and force him into playing long hours of games with me just over and over and over again. And I would like have to manipulate him into doing it more. Like, he'd be like, I'm done. And I'd be like, come on, man, you don't want to be a loser, do you? You know, like, horrible. Like, the kind of stuff, you know, you just feel bad about now.
Oh, but it's the role of a big brother, kind of being like, come on, let's do this. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I will assume this because I know this about you now. I imagine it wasn't because you had some sort of sick enjoyment of making him lose and like taking that. You were like, you just wanted to play video games and he was your younger brother.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, I wasn't losing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because he's your younger brother and he sucks.
I mean, yeah, exactly. And I made sure it stayed that way. No, yeah. I mean, it was like, it started getting to the point, and I actually started doing this with you guys in hockey. Because we play hockey.
We do.
I don't get to play with you as much as I used to, but I started doing the thing with, like, Jimmy, where Jimmy would get frustrated, he would want to quit. And I'd say, well, why don't I play as a Eastern European team?
Yeah, the bad
team. And then you can play as any NHL team. And then I'd still win.
Yeah.
And then he'd get frustrated.
And that shows a level of mastery of the video game, which I think is really interesting. We don't talk about mastery in terms of video games because it is a game, it is something that is kind of below us. But when you can take that sort of massive, massive handicap and still, and you would be playing three people at a time in terms of a team going on versus one person. And in any other situation, I mean, that's not going to lead to a win, but you more often than not will always, no matter how hard the odds are stacked against you, when we are playing NHL, you always come out on top, or it's a tie and then it's a shootout, so it's a dice roll, you know?
Right. Yeah, and it was getting to a point at one point where I don't think anyone in our group of friends wanted to necessarily play with me anymore. Like, they wanted to play the game.
Yeah.
But I think they were frustrated with playing with me in the game, and that is once again where I start doing the same thing I did to my brother. Little manipulation test. Okay, I'll be this really small team.
No.
And the problem with NHL in particular was when I would do that, the pictures of the players pop up when they score goals. And when you're playing as these small minor league Eastern European teams, they look like they're 13 years old. And when it's so hard to manipulate someone into feeling like, no, you have a chance to win this, when like a 13-year-old just scored on them four times, you know, like.
It's double painful, absolutely. So at what point do you think in your video game history did you begin to get into that danger zone of my work life balance is off in terms of you are playing video games more than you are actually going out and experiencing life?
Yeah. So there's kind of two points. One of them was the first time that around the time I was playing Halo in one of the Grand Theft Autos.
Sure.
So those had just come out.
So that's, you're playing on the Xbox. That's what, 2002, 2001, maybe even a little earlier than that?
Something around there. I think it was Halo 2, and then one of the Grand Theft Auto. I don't remember which Grand Theft Auto.
That would have been San Andreas if it was Grand Theft Auto 2, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That could have been it. And so I was playing those, and I was in college, and I wasn't leaving my house much. I was skipping classes, and I found myself so enraptured that I think I started doing something that I'm sure every video game person can attest to, which is I leave the house, but I'm still seeing things in that video game.
Yeah.
Like, I would leave and have these weird messed up ideas that, like, I would walk out my front door and I'd see someone way across a park, and I'd say, I bet I could snipe them from here. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have to stop and realize, I just said I want to kill that person. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't explicitly say that, but I was saying I could shoot them with a gun from here.
Sure.
Which is very strange.
Yes.
So that was the first time that I started to get concerned. Mm-hmm. It wasn't long after that I moved to Chicago, and this was the time that I really recognized that I had an issue, which was, I moved to Chicago, I really didn't have any friends, I was just starting improv, and me and my girlfriend had just moved into a place in Lincoln Park, and really didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't have a job, didn't have anything going on. So I started playing NBA 2K5. Mm-hmm. I played that to a detrimental degree. I would get up around 10, 11 o'clock. I would maybe spend 20 minutes looking for a job. I would then go sit to play one game. I would play until about 8 o'clock at night. I'd suddenly look around and go, it's dark out. Mm-hmm. Oh, I should do something. I haven't eaten anything all day. I should grab some food. I'd order some food. It'd come to the door. I'd say, I'll play a game while I eat my food, and then when I'm done, I'm going to jump back on and start looking for jobs, and I'd play till 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. in the morning. And I'd do the same thing the next day.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend was noticing that something was up. And I kept completely denying it.
Sure.
No, it's, look, I looked for jobs for, a little bit today while you were gone. Not true. And I found myself lying in situations.
Sure.
Covering up. And around this time was when I became, and this is what the story I told you guys, I became fourth in the world at NBA 2K5.
Yeah. Now let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah.
Because that's, I don't think in the video game world that I am in Chicago, that ranking as a video game person means anything anymore.
Oh,
but
sure.
When you say I was fourth in the world at a sports video game, that's important to me.
Really?
Yeah, because it's like, well, that's, you did something right there. It's not, like, for some reason, because I don't really play FPS games, when someone's talking about, like, oh, I'm really good at, like, Call of Duty, I'm like, sure you are. You know, it doesn't mean too much, but a sports game, for some reason, because sports is real, and killing people is also real, but it's not something I can go out there and do.
Right.
You and I can go and we can play basketball.
Totally.
And you might not be, excuse me, I won't put this on you, I might not be the best basketball player in the world, but I can go and play a game and fantasize and be good about that and feel good and like the sport and enjoy it.
Sure.
But to be good to a level of, on a global scale of, and everybody who's playing this game, you are fourth in the world, that's, I mean, you're getting a ring at that point if you're on that team, you know?
Right, right.
If you're the fourth man on the Bulls, during Jordan's era, you're still getting a ring.
Yeah. Oh, let me think. So I was basically, I'd say like the Ron Harper.
There you go.
Of the Chicago Bulls.
And there definitely are Ron Harper jerseys floating around Chicago still.
Yeah, totally.
They have to be.
I need to pick one of those up. Yeah, it was strange because at the time, and I don't know that they really do this as much anymore. I don't play online as much anymore. But it was a ranking system. Mm-hmm. You had your total wins, your total losses, your percentage, and if you had so many wins, that put you into a different group, and you had to have thousands of wins, and I did.
Against human players? Or
these are human players.
Okay.
Yeah. These are people all over the world. Mm-hmm. I think, I'm just going off memory, it was something ridiculous. I think I had won something like 5,000 games and lost 20.
Wow.
Yeah. And each game is a good 20 to 30 minutes on there, you know? So I always played the Chicago Bulls.
Uh-huh.
They weren't even the best team on there. You know, I just knew how to...
This before Rose, too, right?
Oh, yeah. This was Kirk Heinrich, Eddie Curry, Tyson Chandler days. Like, this is...
Wow, okay.
This is when they had just sort of revamped and were starting to get new prospects that were pretty good. Kirk Heinrich, I couldn't miss a three with the guy. Mm-hmm. I still can. I just bought 2K15, and whenever I play, I actually am... I get mad at the developers of the game for making Kirk Heinrich so good, because all I want to do is play with Kirk Heinrich. He's one of my favorite players anyway, but he's so much better on that game than he is in real life. He does not hit that many threes, and I love him.
Yeah, he's a great player, but
he is not that guy. So I ended up fourth in the world, and
was that something you were trying to do? Was that something in your mind you were consciously saying, well, I don't have a job and I'm enjoying this, or did that just happen one day?
No, that, I started creeping up, slowly but surely. And you start to learn these little tricks, especially back then, because games were not, they were at that crossing point where they were starting to get sophisticated.
Sure.
But you could still, especially with sports games, find those little bugs that, you know, you still do it. iPhone games are really good for that. You know what I mean? We find those little bugs that we know exactly when to swipe, and we can always just stack combos or whatever it is.
Charlie's referring to Spider-Man Unlimited, a game that I have recently stopped playing because I realized I will never, ever be able to beat. It will always be something that takes away from my enjoyment, my time. And when I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, I gotta play, I realize it's a problem.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. There is a level of the human mind that you begin to obsess about how do I get better and what are the tricks and ways I can get better about this. And you begin, I know for me, I started watching videos and started going on forums to be like, well, maybe there are things about this game that I'm not understanding. Because there are scores out there that are in the millions, if not the billions. And I'm like, well, these guys have to know something.
Yeah.
Even if they are breaking the game, that score exists out there.
Somehow they're getting there. Yeah. Yeah, I started doing that recently because I think I told you I'm getting into Marvel Contest of Champions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I have learned how to beat most people that I end up playing, which I actually, and I don't know if anyone is playing this, but like, I don't think when they say you're going up against another human, I think they are false. I think they are lying to you.
I completely think they're lying to you as well.
There's no real time interaction. They don't do things you would expect another human to do.
Exactly. They almost act the exact same way as the bots do. And you think about how I play the game in terms of how much I'm dancing around and moving, and it's like, if you're thinking about the basics of what a Street Fighter kind of game is, it's all about controlling space. And you can do things to help control space. If you see me, I'm moving forward, you can move back and then hit with a combo. You're having that sort of, you're parrying that way. But I've never seen that when I started playing the game. And that's what made me not like playing the game, because I was like, I'm just playing robots, and if I'm playing a fighting game, I want to play with people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that was the thing, too. They allow me to choose who fights who, which you can have a leg up, because if, like, your mutant fights a guy that gets their powers through science, so if a mutant fights Spider-Man, the mutant always has a leg up.
Exactly.
They allow me to choose that against the other person's team every single time, which makes no sense. Am I always getting the advantage? The guy on the other end always going, man, why does this guy get to choose this?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make sense. So I think that they may be choosing real people's teams out in the world, but that's not a real person I'm playing. Anyway, so in the basketball game, I started finding those things. A really good one at that time was you could take a player down, and just about, I'd say 95% of the time, if you kept a player down on one end of the court, once the rebound was got, you could just throw it all the way down, and 95% of the time they would get that pass, and you could score.
I remember that in NBA Jam as well, as you could, if you were on fire, the moment you got the ball, you could hit a three from the other side. And it was just like, well, this is always going in. I'm on fire. It's always going to be going in.
Yep.
I mean, like, what is that? Is that technically called cheesing? I mean, yeah, I think that's cheesing. I know in MMOs, like my brief period playing World of Warcraft, which was very similar in the sense of, like, I would wake up, I didn't go to class, I just played World of Warcraft. And this is the first iteration of World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Really being like, well, I like these people in this game more than I like the real people that I hang out with in real life. And anytime I hung out with people in real life, I was like, fuck these people. They don't get it. I don't like them. And I was like, that's when I was like, nope, this is not a game I need to keep playing.
Yeah. I mean, it's scary because I started to find, this is when I knew I really had a problem, is when I would do that thing where I'd play all day, I wouldn't really see the sun all day long. I would stop around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'd start to get depressed. And I'd say, what did I just do with my day? What have I done with my week? What have I done with my month? What am I doing here? and I'd get really depressed and get just so down, and then I'd say, oh, what can I do to make myself feel better? I need to win another game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'd win another game, and when I didn't feel better, maybe if I get up to 6,000 wins, I'll feel better. Okay, yeah. Though that's only 200 more games. Let me just strive to get there. And when I'd get to 6,000 games, I'd feel even more empty because there went another week that I had just completely wasted. And that's when I knew I had a problem. When the only solution to the problem to me was adding to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like in... I was talking to a friend of ours last night who's an alcoholic, and I was kind of, I was afraid to talk about this in the podcast because I was like, I don't want to degrade the word addiction.
Exactly.
And he was like, no, what you're saying is 100% true. He was like, you know, when I drink, the thing that I thought would make me feel better when I'd get depressed is another drink. That is 100%. You know, it's about willpower and all about like how you lose that willpower. Yeah. And so... my girlfriend, you know, I had to manipulate that relationship to make sure she didn't leave me.
I think, just to make sure you don't feel like you're a scumbag, I think that is something that all people who are in a situation like that do.
Yeah.
As someone who definitely have been in situations where I'm depressed and I'm going to continue to go back to the video game, that's easier because that's a situation I can control.
Yeah.
That's something I can do to make myself feel better. I get the serotonin release in my brain. I feel it's that instant release of totally. I can feel better. And then anybody who tried to take that away from me, it would be so easy for me to say, look, I'm in a bad place. This is something that I'm doing to try to take care of myself. You're preventing me from taking care of myself. How selfish are you?
Yeah.
And when that's your fucking logic...
Yo, it's like, terrible.
It's terrible, but at the time, because you are separated from the rest of the world because you're so focused and you're so dialed into this video game, that logic makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm glad our mutual friend who is an alcoholic said that. I think it's so easy for people to say, well, you can't say you're addicted to video games because video games can destroy lives like drugs and alcohol.
Right.
But that's shaming people who are addicted to other things. It's the same way people are addicted to Facebook and the internet and sex and
food.
Food, exactly. Yeah. It's like, well, just because I'm doing something that's not poison doesn't mean that I'm any less addicted to the act of doing it and right. that has this power over me. We have to kind of look at video games as like, well, I mean, this is here. It's important. It's something we're a part of. There are people who are addicted to all sorts of things. And I think definitely I was happy that you were interested in coming and talking about this because as someone who plays video games all the time and as someone who has things outside of video games that I like to do where it's like, great, I love spending time with my son. I love spending time with my girlfriend. I love spending time with my friends. But I also love playing video games. How do I balance all this kind of stuff? I remember when Dennis was born, Grand Theft Auto 5 came out.
Oh.
And he's sleeping in the other room and I'm playing Grand Theft Auto 5. And he starts crying and I got upset for a second. Because I was like, well, now I gotta pause this game right now and go hang out with my kid. And I instantly was like, fuck that.
Whoa.
Unplugged the video game, put the video games in a box and said, I gotta not feel that way because I got a responsibility and I have this sort of need. But you have those moments where you realize that maybe this is a bigger issue for me. Maybe there's something else.
Oh, totally. I mean, it took a while. The thing that finally did it was I got about $4,000 in debt to my girlfriend because I couldn't pay rent.
Sure.
I had sort of just, my parents were calling and saying, you're probably going to have to come home. Like, what else are you going to do? You haven't found a job. You say you've been looking really hard and, you know, had a million excuses. There was all sorts of things. And so, the thing, it's been very strange because, it feels like I was just constantly looking for that short term, like we were sort of discussing, but just kind of giving straight words to it, like that short term gratification to make me feel better about the situation I was in. That short term gratification always ended up empty. And so what ended up happening was my girlfriend basically said, I'm either gone or you get a job. Mm-hmm. One of the two. And that has to change within X date. And I said, okay. So I worked my ass off. I got a job. The job that I got was selling cell phones, and it was one of the worst jobs I've ever had, but it also was mostly I had to work nights. So because I would sleep, like, I would go to, I'd get home at, like, whatever time, and she was like, you're not getting on that video game because you'll stay up all night, you'll miss work tomorrow, and I was like, okay, so she was, like, regulating it. I didn't play for, I think it was about a month or two. So one day, nervously, actually cognizantly nervous of it, I sat down to play, and when I logged in, I was expecting to see, I might have dropped a couple of spaces on the, you know, world rankings, who knows what, you know, I was kind of interested to see where I'd end up, and it had all been erased.
What?
Xbox back in the day only kept your information for so long, and if you did not play in the game, it all went away.
Oh, my God.
So I started, I'd logged in, and I'm at 0-0. I have no wins, I have no losses.
Oh.
And I said...
Wow.
In, which was a lifesaver. Like, if I had had that, and I'd started playing again, and I'd won a couple of games, or lost some, which was even worse, because if I lost some, I had to play four to make me feel better
about the loss.
So, instead I logged in. I was at 0-0. There was no reason for me to start because there was no way I was going to catch back up to the guys who had thousands of games, not with this job and everything. So I said, all right. And I pretty much put that game down and never played again. Funny enough, though, I did run into Eddie Curry. I sold him his cell phones. And I told him, yeah, I said, by the way, I almost didn't get this job because I was so busy playing as you in a video game. And he was like, how'd I do? And I was like, you were killing it.
Yeah.
I didn't tell him, you helped me get to fourth in the world, man. He would have enjoyed that because things did not go well for Eddie Curry after that point. No. But, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what I'm hearing you say, though, is it sounds like at a certain point you realized that being fourth on the world, whether or not you realized it at the time or not, it mattered to you. Like, that meant something to you. Do you think that that meant something to you because you were in Chicago and you didn't know what you were doing? Or do you think in terms of your larger sense of, like, I want to be great at something, and this is something I'm randomly good at?
You know, I think it was at a time, you know, you come out of college, and people deal coming out of college in, with, you know, in different ways.
Yeah.
Like, that insecurity. You know, some people dive in, some people move and they start drinking and they party and they do all that stuff. I did that once I got into improv. You know, everyone kind of has their own little moments there. I think for me, that was how I handled the insecurity was all of a sudden in this world, I would get on and have the headphones on. I would always keep them muted. I didn't like talking to people unless I got really depressed and then I'd talk to people to like, just to have an interaction with someone. But they would log on sometimes and I would have literally people who would, it connect us and then they'd go, oh, no way in hell I'm playing you. And they knew who I was.
Wow.
They would, and I was like, I would feel this weird sense of power. The problem also came in that the minute I walked out the front door, that was gone.
It's gone, yeah.
I would tell people every now and then, like, people who I'd meet, we'd be talking about something, hey, do you play video games? Yeah, I play video games. What do you play about? And I'd say, like, yeah, I'm fourth in the world at this game. And it meant nothing. And they'd go, oh, cool. And it was almost like, most of the time, I don't think they believed me because, I don't know. Because
it's a hard concept to understand in a video game, you know?
Yeah. But it was very strange. I felt powerful when I sat down in front of the TV. When I was outside in the world and I was the guy without a job who couldn't pay his rent, all those things, I felt tiny in a city I didn't really know or understand. So it was my coping mechanism for a long time, which which was not healthy.
But and this is certainly not to kind of retcon your life, but in some ways, there are worse things you could have been doing.
Oh, totally.
And to try and find a way to spin it in a certain way, what do you think you learned about yourself? What do you think you learned about your... Because it's like, you're a hardworking individual. When you put yourself to something, having worked with you on multiple shows, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this right. Like, it's obvious to me that you were fourth in the world for a reason. You were good at it, and you were determined. People have talent, and people have the skills to be able to apply that talent. You happen to have that, and it worked well in a video game. Mm-hmm. But because we look at video games that they're just games for kids, we don't understand that these are skills that actually translate into other parts of our lives.
Yeah, you know, that's... We mentioned it at the beginning, but that's why I was thinking about this today. I went and bought a bunch of motorcycle stuff today.
Yeah,
it was...
Yeah.
To kind of put my obsession with motorcycles into context, last weekend I went to Wisconsin to buy mm-hmm. a motor for a motorcycle because I want it. It's just a broken one. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take it apart just so I can see the inside of it. But while I was there...
What sort of motor, just in case there's other people out there who...
Sure.
Sure.
It's a 1966 Honda CB77 motor. So I have a 1965 CB77 mm-hmm. that I ride, mm-hmm. But I'm... just new enough that I'm afraid to go taking apart the motor on, mm-hmm. on something that I want to ride that day, you know? Mm-hmm. So, instead I went and bought a motor so I could do that. But while I'm there, the guy says, you know, and I don't have, I mean, I make a decent living, but mm-hmm. I don't make enough that I can usually just go throw hundreds of dollars at whatever.
Yeah.
Guy says to me, you know, I also got this, little motorcycle over here. And I said, oh yeah? And he goes, yep, bought that for $200 last weekend. And I said, oh wow. He goes, yeah, you interested in it? I said, well, what do you want for it? He goes, make me an offer. I said, 300. He goes, 320. I said, yeah, okay, fine, 320. Now we got to figure out how to get in my Honda Accord. So I removed my back seat, which I didn't even know how to do before, and I shoved a motorcycle into the back of my car.
Now, so people can understand, this is not a Harley Davidson motorcycle. This is probably another Honda. This is a smaller bike.
It's a Suzuki.
Or, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a smaller one-cylinder bike. Still... the backseat of a Honda Accord is just no place unless you're getting like the Benny the Bull, like tiny motorcycle that he like rides around.
We also want to thank our sponsors, Honda. They make amazing cars, they make amazing motorcycles, they make amazing keyboards, and everything else that Honda makes.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it. It's just amazing stuff. So.
It really is. Yeah. And thank you for sending over all that free stuff, Honda.
Yeah.
So I shoved everything into the back of a car and like made my poor girlfriend had to sit with her mm-hmm. seat all the way up so that we could fit a motorcycle in the back. I got through it by promising her I would do that. But one of the things that I recognized is the talent you were kind of talking mm-hmm. about, like the determination.
Yeah.
I decided to start focusing that in different directions.
Sure.
So you've worked with me on shows mm-hmm. and I've focused some of that there. I become obsessive over the shows when I'm directing them. Generally, you've only dealt with it a couple of times. Our friend Jimmy has dealt with it mm-hmm. more than that, I think, which is when I give him a ride home after rehearsals. I either don't talk mm-hmm. or I have to talk about...
the whole time.
Like, mm-hmm. okay, do you guys think that this match... you know, like, I become obsessed with it. And I decided more recently that if I'm going to do something, I don't want to have that short-term... feeling that doesn't lead to anything longer term. Mm-hmm. So with motorcycles, the cool thing that I'm doing now is it's like playing a video game.
Sure.
Like, tomorrow I'm going to clean my carbs for the first time ever. I've never done this. Mm-hmm. I've listened to some podcasts. I'm reading a book. I'm going to take them apart. I'm going to clean them. I'm going to reassemble them and put them back in and
sure.
then time them, make sure that everything works correctly afterwards. This is my new video game.
Sure.
You know,
it's tangible.
It's, yeah, and mm-hmm. I almost don't even, it's weird. I'm looking at it as, video games have gotten so intense now, mm-hmm. or so, what's the word I'm looking for, like, detailed?
Sure.
I once went over to Jimmy's house when he lived with mm-hmm. Matt,
mm-hmm.
And Matt, we got up one morning and we were leaving, and Matt was playing Skyrim or Fallout, one of the two.
Sure. One of the Bethesda big open world RPG games. Yeah.
And as we were leaving, we said, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm making ammo.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you're making ammo.
Sure.
He was like, yeah, I had to go, you know, like mine this ore and mm-hmm. then I had to go buy these things and then I put them together and I have to heat it up. And I was like, oh my God. We left. 8 hours later, we came back.
Mm-hmm.
When we walked in, I look over. He's still making ammo.
Sure.
And I was like, how much ammo are you making? Well, I went to this place and I got some more stuff. So then I came back and I'm now making more ammo because I want to get a whole arsenal. And
mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you for 8 hours have made ammo in something you will never, once this game's over, it will never go anywhere.
Yeah.
So I decided if I was going to spend 8 hours doing something that's that technical,
mm-hmm.
not even like adventure to a far world and, you know, kill a bunch of aliens, I'm going to make ammo. If I'm going to make ammo, I'm going to redo a carb.
Yeah.
And then when I'm done, I'm going to get to ride this motorcycle
mm-hmm.
in the real world. Out real air you blowing on me, like, and people will see the fruits of the labors instead of it being that thing where I walk out my front door and it doesn't matter that yeah. I'm fourth in the world. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter that I just won my 6,000th game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's become, I think, the reason my motorcycle obsession has gotten so big lately.
Sure, yeah, and I can relate to that in terms of my own coffee experience.
Yeah.
And food, like,
oh,
for
yeah.
me, food became the thing. Whereas, like, if food becomes something, because it's like with the motorcycle, I hear what you're saying. I'm like, great, the motorcycle's there. It's like, yeah, but what happens when the motorcycle's done? Like,
yeah.
for me, food is the thing I will never finish. There will never be a thing I can do so well.
Yeah.
For me, for a lot of last year, it was I have to learn how to cook eggs perfectly.
Yeah,
and it was great. I'm going to make sure I'm making egg dishes at least twice a week because I don't want to get super unhealthy by eating all these eggs and
totally.
Hurt myself. So I'm like, it's this min-maxing of, all right, well, how many eggs can I eat a week before it starts hurting me? And what can I do with eggs? And how do I cook eggs so I can make eggs for other people so I can justify making eggs that way? And I'm like, all of that is the same obsessive things that go into games like Skyrim
yeah.
and Fallout. And food becomes a thing for me that I can constantly be working towards and learning and getting excited about it and learning about podcasting and generally being a nerd
mm-hmm.
and getting excited about it the same way I would get excited about playing video games.
Yeah.
But the thing that I've learned, and this is the question I want to have for you,
yeah.
I'm playing outside of the world, so when I come back to video games, there's a shallowness suddenly to the video game because
yeah.
it doesn't feel the same. I can't experience the same sort of high that I used to get. Maybe high is the wrong sort of word, but I don't have that same connection as I once did because the real world feels so much better sometimes
oh, yeah.
than the thing that I'm physically doing. You and I, we still play video games. We've been talking about Far Cry. We talk about when we play NHL. Mm-hmm. There are other games that we see coming out that kind of looks fun. I know there are video games that are coming out. I still think a ton about video games.
Oh,
video
yeah.
games are still something I'm directly in touch with. I listen to video games podcasts. I listen to it. I read. It's still something I'm really involved in. But it doesn't have that same sort of effect as it once did. Is that similar for you?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, okay.
And that's what scares me. So what I started doing was, because that feeling hadn't gone away,
mm-hmm.
I stopped buying games.
Sure.
I have bought, in the last year, 3 games.
Oh, okay.
NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim bought NHL both
sure,
times,
yeah.
I think, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But NBA and Far Cry 3.
Mm-hmm.
When I bought I've now learned with sports games, I don't get online.
Yeah.
Playing a season doesn't do as much for me, so I play with you guys. That
yeah.
has become my social outlet.
Mm-hmm.
When you guys leave, I refuse to play.
Yeah.
Because I did play NHL 13 without you guys,
mm-hmm.
and after playing 3 seasons in about a month, which is 240 some odd games.
Wow.
246 games. Minus playoffs, so
mm-hmm.
not even including playoffs.
Yeah.
So I've probably played 300 games in about a month. And those games are about 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And
so that's 10 games a day?
I was playing something ridiculous. Like,
wow.
I would usually get up in the morning before I went to work. I'd play when I got home at night. I would play until about 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
My insomnia when
mm-hmm.
video games is around kicks in hardcore.
Yeah.
I don't sleep, I play, I get up with 3 hours of sleep, I go to work, I'm miserable, I hate everything at work. When I get home, because I'm so depressed from the horrible day I've had at work, I pick up video games.
Yeah, yeah.
So, after playing hockey, and I got to the point where I was, I mean, for sorry to say this, but demolishing you guys.
No, like, and you were. I mean, that's
yeah.
the thing. You're great at this game still. Like, I mean,
yeah.
it's the thing. It's like, it's your natural skill set of this game is you can do things in this game that I keep looking around. And I'm like, I don't, what, am I doing it wrong? Do I play video games all the time, and yet I pick up a controller, and it's like, it's the first time I've ever played a game with you, because I'm like, I don't get it. This doesn't, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I had just gotten so good that it was getting hard for me to get people to play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jimmy, who will play that game just about any time at one point, kind of was like, eh. Because I was, I would win all six games we'd play in a night, mm-hmm. he kind of just didn't want to play anymore.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of said, like, oh, I recognize I'm falling into this place. Job was starting to get frustrating because mm-hmm. I was constantly up so late. That sort of thing. Far Cry 3 was also a problem.
Sure.
I bought it, was up till 3 or 4 every night.
And it's a game that encourages that. It's a big open world. You can do whatever you want. There's a lot of collectibles. There's all the stuff. There's a story, and it's a linear story, but you don't necessarily have to follow it in the same sort of linear path mm-hmm. as you would for, let's say, an Uncharted. Like, there's all this stuff, and that's the fun part about that game. I, having talked with you and talked with some other friends of ours, I've given that game another chance, and I've been really anti that game for a long time.
Really?
Oh, yeah, but I played that game when Dennis was born, so I instantly had this sort of like, ugh, I don't want to play this game, and now I'm playing it, and I'm like, oh, this game is really fun.
It really is.
This game is really fun.
And it's, it was a problem, and mm-hmm. thank goodness I started doing everything. You know what I mean? I started doing the, okay, well, I could win this game, but I also won't win it without having all my ammo pouches mm-hmm. unless I go kill 3 warthogs right now. Like, things like that are just like, I had to go kill 3 warthogs. Yeah. Everything stops. The world stops until I kill 3 warthogs, and then we can talk, Jesse. Mm-hmm. That's my girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we can talk. And then I'd kill the 3 warthogs and get the new ammo patch, but now I gotta try that new ammo patch.
Yeah.
Like, let me just try it first, and let me see how that goes. Oh, I just got sucked into another mission.
Mm-hmm.
So, that one was a real problem. And that's when I realized, again, I just probably can't do open world games.
Yeah. I mean, it's... There's a game that's coming out on the PlayStation 4 called No Man's Sky, which mm-hmm. looks amazing to me. It's this concept of you have a starfighter and you land on a planet and the whole world, the whole universe is open to you and everybody else is in the universe and they all start on these planets and you're kind of figuring out like, well, you're on this planet and you can go and you can find other planets and you make your ship better so you can get to planets that are farther away and you're slowly start meeting up with other people and you can be on these planets that are like, holy shit, there was a whole culture here that's completely randomly generated. And also, if you find a planet where another person's been, you've been like, oh my god, look at all this stuff. Oh, the animals are randomly generated, the planes, all this stuff is randomly generated, and they're talking about this game being like, well, yeah, you're out on the rim of the universe and your goal is to get to the center of this galaxy. And I'm like, I could lose myself in this game because it's social that way.
Yeah.
If I was like, great, we're all going to get together at 9 o'clock tonight and we're going to play for 3 hours and we're going to be in this world and we're going to do this together. That is a whole nother element of, well, we're drinking together or we're hanging out. It's not a problem because we're socializing. We're not seeing that we're kind of being obsessed with this sort of thing because we're doing it together, and that socially is more acceptable than being up till 3 o'clock in the morning by yourself. Because at least we're experiencing something together that outside of the world we can talk about.
Oh yeah, I mean, we'll play hockey for mm-hmm. 4 or 5 hours sometimes, and I don't blink twice as long as I have you guys mm-hmm. in the room with me. I do have a question for you. There was a thing I saw on Facebook today, which was, I can't remember his name, the guy that did that show Dirty Jobs.
Mike Rowe.
Mike Rowe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a speech he gave about how you shouldn't follow your dream. Have you heard about this?
What?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
I mean, it was interesting. It was a very, like, practical point of view of, like, look, someone has to clean septic tanks.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone's following their dream, no one's going to clean septic tanks.
Sure.
I'm starting to wonder with these games in which we have these, like, you are creating a world and everyone wants to be a starfighter. Mm-hmm. When the population of that world is made up of just gamers, who cleans the septic tanks? You know what I mean? Like, who's the player who gets on there and goes, like, he's looking through, he's like, oh, I could be a wizard, an alien, septic tank cleaner, I'll choose that guy, and I'm gonna amp that up, you know, like.
Well, I mean, you look at games like Second Life, and they touch on stuff like that, where it's like, everyone has to have a job, WoW does stuff like that in terms of, like, you can make money in WoW by doing things, so you got your farm, and you find these jobs where you can, it's more than just going out there and killing things. That to me just, it's, it's beyond my understanding and reasoning of why you would do something like that, but these people get something out of it that I don't in terms of going out there and doing that. Now, I will say, when I was playing Skyrim, and when I was, the second episode of this podcast, I was on Skyrim and I talked about this, and it's still something I think about, I was obsessed with mining in that game. Mining was the biggest thing for me. I was like, I maxed out my character in mining more than anything else. My character was a shitty fighter, had no magic skills, but if I saw an ore, I could get it instantly, because I said, if I have this skill now, I can start turning this into something bigger. And it became that sort of thing about, like, sure, it's the grasshopper versus the ant sort of in a video game. Most video games is like, you want to be a tank, you want to go out there, you want to kill, you want to kill, you want to kill. It's like, sure, you want to do that, but I'm the guy who's going to sell you that sword, and I'm the guy who's going to sell you that armor. And I was like, boy, like, why can't I apply that in real life? Like, you know, why don't I have the practical skills to be like, I should really open up a bank and I can help small businesses get there, when in reality I'm like, I want to be the real rock star, but in a video game I want to be the rational, practical player.
But see, I think you, and that's what's interesting, is that, and I can say this about both of us necessarily, like, we're both doing jobs that we like, but we're not doing the job that we are passionate necessarily about,
sure.
Long-term,
yeah.
Career, ambition 60 years from now, you know, kind of thing. But I think to a certain degree you could be that miner, in that you and I have talked about coffee shops.
Yeah,
and how
absolutely.
You would love to start a coffee shop. There are so many people who would say, the least interesting thing in the world to me would be to make coffee all day.
Oh.
And to make... I know.
I'm just like, oh, those people don't know anything at all day. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Something that is completely interesting and fascinating and I'm obsessed with is the most boring, you know, asinine subject to somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the, you know, the beauty of life is we're not all the same and we like different things. And, you know, in video games too, there are so many video games that people were absolutely obsessed with. Last week's episode, we had, our friend Aaron on, and he was talking about this Dragon Age game, and there were aspects of
that
game.
Do I know Aaron?
Aaron Amendola.
Yeah, it's that Aaron.
Yeah, exactly, that Aaron. And he was talking about aspects of the game, and I was like, that sounds really great. And he was talking about other aspects, and I'm like, that sounds so fucking boring to me. I mean, this is a game he loves. It's the best game he's ever played. And it's odd when you're presented with something like that. The same way that, like, when I've talked to people about NHL, they're like, ugh, that's not a video game. And it's like, no, that's as much a video game as Call of Duty is a video game, in the sense of it's you versus another player, and you're doing a series of motions and button pushes that allow you to best the person. Like,
and you're experiencing life through that, through a dream sequence. Like, you're an NHL player.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I will never be an NHL player. I will also never be on planet, whatever.
Exactly.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are aspects of we're living a fantasy, and we talk about video games. I'm still, and this is maybe we can talk about this briefly, this concept of first-person games, second-person games, and third-person games. Like, I'm still trying to wrap my head. We had this conversation.
Yes.
This is another thing of, what is a second-person game?
Okay. And I love how many of you have, because I have said,
yeah.
I know what a second person game is.
Yeah.
And this is me going out on a limb, because I don't know how many people listen to this. So
a lot of people do. So,
all right. So if I'm right, write in.
Mm-hmm. leave a comment in the Facebook post.
Yeah.
Find people on Twitter or whatever.
If you think I'm wrong,
keep your opinions to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So we were in the dressing room after one of our shows, and we're talking, and someone said, "Okay, so you're playing? Is it a first person game or a third person shooter?" And I said, "Oh, it's a first person." Someone said, "Well, what's a second?" And I said, "That would be a character in the game watching you as you did things."
Mm-hmm.
To a certain degree, there are kind of, there's not really games that do that. Not really, but if you were to say, in our hockey game, we use a hockey game,
mm-hmm.
if you were to only have the view of the referees or the umps or whatever they are, I guess
they're not. The refs.
Refs,
yeah.
The linesman.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to have their view while you played, that would be second degree. Second person. You are watching through the eyes of a character that is not... So, like, in books, I'm pretty sure... I didn't get an English degree, but I got a theater degree.
Yeah. That's the same.
It's... Yeah. Yeah. Right? They're just as applicable in the real world.
Yeah.
it would be a character talking about the main character, and you're seeing everything through their eyes.
Versus a third person, which is what most games are in the sense of, like, if you're playing Red Dead Redemption, that's a third person. It's an omnipresent presence who is watching everything, and we're seeing it through John Marston's eyes. First person is we are only seeing it through the eyes of the person we are playing. We are role-playing into that character.
Yes.
But you're right. What is second person in a video game? And I'm still trying to wrap my head around that, because second person and third person are so close, so it would almost have to be something where you are playing... you're Patrick Kane in this video game, but the ref doesn't see you. So you come, it's not like the ref's always following you. There would be times where you playing Patrick Kane.
I mean, if the ref wants to watch you the entire time, I mean, you could set up a view where the ref, let's say we did create this view.
Yeah.
The ref could watch you the entire time. You're just gonna see it on the ice, and you're gonna see it from this guy who's skating back and forth. You will not have control over that main guy.
Yeah.
You will only have control over Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, like, it makes, I mean, once you say it, I think it makes so much sense. No one does it. And I think we also, third person view truly is omnipresent. I mean, it is, if you're Christian, it's God's view, right? It is a person, it's a ghost that is above everything and saying, like, seeing everything and can look wherever it wants. In Far Cry 3, for example, when you open up a bell tower or whatever, a radio tower, and it zooms around and then comes back and is a third person. But so, like,
Atari games, early Nintendo games, all of those games are, I don't want to say all, because there are some early kind of like RPG games where you are the character, but all of those games are third person because you are separated from the action that way. You're seeing Mario run across the screen. Mm-hmm. You are seeing the car when you're playing Ridge Racer driving that way. You're seeing Mega Man. You're seeing Donkey Kong. All those things are all third person that
way. Yeah. I know it boggles the mind that... Mm-hmm. I think we're all confused because we all feel like there should have been a second-person game at some point.
So far, and maybe there was, and it failed terribly. Like, but it's one of those things where it's like, why isn't that a genre? Because it could work in its odd sort of esoteric way. There's a game called The Novelist, which comes close, but I remember talking with someone online about this, that The Novelist technically is third-person because you are watching these characters, and you are the novelist helping them get through the day. You're the omnipresent thing, so you are, it's almost like The Sims that way, where you are helping them kind of function that way. I mean, is The Sims...
I know a second person game.
What's a second person game?
Mario Kart.
No, wait a second.
You're a guy with a camera above... Remember they float around with the camera and they go...
The turtle guys or mushroom guys or something up in a cloud. Yeah, it's the little guy in the cloud who usually drops little, like, spiky guys. Okay, folks, if you've gotten this far in this episode, I realize this is a weird episode, if you've gotten this far... You need to tell us if we're right or we're wrong. It is so imperative that we understand that
Mario Kart, I think, truly is. And I think in replays, you see the guy with the camera.
You do see him behind you.
That is a second-person game. That is the only game I can think of that is second person.
The only small debate I could say is there's not one of those guys for every player, though. There's one for everybody, technically. So he's kind of like...
True.
You know?
So he takes on, when you're playing multiplayer, he takes on an omnipresent.
An omnipresent place. Because it's the same way that you could say, like, if you're playing a sports game, you're simply watching from the point of view of...
The camera operator.
Cause it's like,
but we never see
it. You never see that guy. And it's like he goes and eats a peanut and takes a piss, you know? It's like, you know...
And you can set it to be, like, the camera. Like, we don't when we play. We have that top view that looks down.
We can do the sort of sideline that way. Right?
You can do the sideline, so, but... Fun. Yeah.
Well, Charlie, thank you so much for coming on today. I think we really talked about some great stuff, and I hope you enjoyed being able to kind of talk about your experience that way. And I hope that other people kind of got to hear what you were saying and might have been a little enlightened about their own experience that way. So
yeah, I would say, and I do want to say, if you ever are finishing a game, because and Mick told us this as well, that he would finish the game and feel really empty. From my experience, if I could just say... find something in the real world that does the same thing for you. And I think cooking for you, maybe you can attest to it too. It will do so much. You will suddenly find that you have a talent that is transferable to the real world. I suggest everyone find that talent.
Yeah. And if it is video games that you are, because there are people who their main skill is video games.
That's true.
Absolutely. That's video games should always be something that we can use in as an escape. Like,
yes.
There was a time in my life, and this might be kind of going back into it, but there's a time in my life where I'm like, I can't play video games anymore. They're bad for me. And I was like, well, they're not. Video games aren't sentient. It's not like a toxic relationship with a girl or a friend of mine. This is an object, and this is me.
This is a choice I'm making.
This is a choice I'm making. So as long as I'm making the conscious choice to not let it affect me that way, then mm-hmm. I think I'm fine. And suddenly I started enjoying video games more.
Yeah.
But it's about kind of going through that sort of way. I mean, it's the same way that some people think that they're addicted to something, but in reality, they're just having a hard time with their own lives, and they're using this thing to escape. And,
right.
You know, maybe they just need to take some things in their lives and kind of re-examine that way. So,
yeah.
Lovely. Charlie, at the end of every episode, we kind of say, hey, where can people see you in Chicago? Are you doing anything currently? Is there any projects you are currently working on?
I'm getting ready to direct some stuff at The Annoyance again, some mm-hmm. shows coming up, specifically an unnamed Bigfoot musical and maybe even an unnamed hockey musical
or show.
Maybe musical that I know you're involved in. Mm-hmm. So, I would say overall, if you ever wanted to see me, just stop by The Annoyance Theater at some mm-hmm. point. I'm usually there.
Great.
So.
Wonderful. I am not doing anything currently, but I may or may not be writing a show about hockey. Anyways, I'm going to take us out with one of Clayton's famous catchphrases. Everybody, yeah. Rock your body, yeah. Everybody. Thanks, everyone.
This has been a Nerdalogs production. For more on the Nerdalogs and our shows, please go to www.nerdalogs.com.
Thank you all. I am GrabBot23548X.